It is not very long before I'll hear another podcast or another documentary or another comment amongst clients and colleagues when it comes to leaders who have a large gap of integrity. Here at Living Wholehearted, we are passionate about shrinking the gap between what we preach and how we live. If you've read our book, Shrinking the Integrity Gap, you might understand that principle better. Pick that book up. Well, we decided about 5 years ago to take leaders through a 2-year journey. Whether you are just wanting to be a safe and trusted leader and learn how to create cultures that are healthier, or maybe you've gone through your own journey of being a leader with a large gap and you really want to shrink that gap, we love to take leaders and their spouses, if your spouse is willing to participate, through this 2-year journey. Our applications are open for the Wholehearted Leadership Cohort. The next one begins in January, and we have a special cohort specific to counselors. We have a team of professional counselors at Living Wholehearted, and alongside my clinical director, Dr. Michelle, her and I are going to walk through and help helpers actually shrink their own integrity gap and learn to live in understanding their own story, their limitations, and their greatest contributions, and to learn to live according to their priorities and the call that's on their life instead of the hustle and bustle that many of us leaders fall into. I hope you'll join us. You can apply today at livingwholehearted.com.
My big dream for this, right, is like I want to see people looking at their story, looking at their bodies, and instead of the shame, instead of the labeling, instead of the I'm broken and I can never get past this, just to go, wow, look what God has done in my life.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast, where we help you lead with integrity at home, at work, and in the community.
I'm Tara Mattson, a licensed marriage and family therapist and executive coach.
And I'm Jeff Mattson, an executive coach and organizational development professional.
And together we bring you 2 decades of experience in leader development and trauma-informed therapy. We are so glad you're here to help you become the leader you would follow. Well, welcome back to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We're your hosts, Jeff and Tara Mattson. And today we're going to talk with Erin Carey about just the tension of labels in our mental health world and really being able to approach the way we care for our mental health from a holistic perspective, thinking about our mind, our body, our spirits, and how they're all playing a role. Her personal journey with being diagnosed with PTSD, depression, and bipolar disorder, and then later really finding great recovery and not having those diagnoses anymore. She wants to talk about that personally, but also from a professional lens. We're going to talk about her book, Beyond Your Label, A Holistic Approach to Breaking Old Patterns and Rediscovering a Healthier You in Mind, Body, and Spirit.
Well, Erin Carey is a health coach and mental health advocate. She encourages people to live beyond their labels, sparking hope and wholeness each week through her podcast, Sparking Wholeness. We love that word, wholeness. Erin knows how suffering from chronic illness can infiltrate every area of life. And by age 18, she was given those labels that you described from PTSD, depression, and bipolar disorder. Today, she's living symptom-free. Awesome. She empowers people to be their own health advocates so that they don't have to be limited by a label or a diagnosis. And she and her husband, Richard, live in Tyler, Texas, and have 3 kids. Erin, it is so great to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to chat with you guys.
Yeah, so we love to start with story. And, you know, that's a huge part of understanding some of the labels or the symptoms that we experience in our lives. So share a little bit more, maybe fill in some of the gaps to your own story with those diagnoses and really the turning point in your journey.
Yeah, I mean, you explained it in that brief snippet there that I was diagnosed with some pretty scary sounding labels by the time I was 18. And I will also fill in some of the gaps there and say that I was a preacher's kid, high achieving firstborn, grew up not far from you guys in California until I was 9. My family moved to East Texas. And my life, my early childhood was filled with a lot of chronic immune system issues. And one of the things that I talk about in my book, if we wanted to get nerdy, is psychoneuroimmunology. And it's this the idea that our brain and our immune system are very interconnected. And a lot of times when the immune system is not getting supported the way it needs to be, it can impact how the brain is functioning. And so my parents would tell you that they saw from a very early age that I struggled with mood outbursts, emotional outbursts beyond what was age appropriate at the time. They saw this when I was a young girl. I would just kind of freak out and lose it. And my dad, I think he's joked now he's he's been in ministry for over 40, gosh, probably going on 50 years now. And he would joke that it seemed like I was demon possessed at some points because I would lose it and freak out. And he didn't know what to do. There's no parenting handbook for what to do with that when all the solutions you're trying to use are not working. And I just would not be able to snap out of these fits. And then I experienced what I would consider a pretty significant trauma when I was 9. I watched my grandpa die in my front yard of anaphylactic shock. And anybody who understands how allergies work and anaphylaxis, it's pretty terrifying. And that was something that really ruptured the safety and connection that I experienced in the world. And my felt sense of safety, my neuroception was completely altered by that experience. And I developed PTSD symptoms. But back in, I mean, this was the early 90s, nobody was really talking about what PTSD was, not for little girls in East Texas who maybe had some mood challenges, you know, and that turned into depression in my early high school years. Everybody, you know, surrounded me, tried to do the best we could at the time. I was medicated. The medication they put me on, this is one of those side effects that we don't always talk about. It kind of swung me a little bit too high, and it turned into a diagnosis of bipolar disorder because I was having hypomanic and manic symptoms and manic episodes, which just did not align with who I was as a person. And I would just talk too fast. A lot of people don't understand what mania is. It can be very destructive. I wasn't sleeping. I would talk too much. I'm a fast talker anyway. I always have to remind myself to slow down, but I would have these big ideas of what I wanted to do. I was going to write a book in a day. I was going to graduate college in a day. And I would just like talk about these big ideas for hours on end. And then I would crash. And my parents really started being concerned when some of those behaviors they had seen as a child were escalating in ways that they had never anticipated or expected and didn't know what to do with. So I was given that label. And at first, and this is where it goes into the labels conversation, is it a good thing to receive a label? Is it a bad thing to receive a label? At first, it was relieving, right? Because it made sense to me. The depression label made sense to me. PTSD made sense to me. It's like, oh, there's something physically happening in my body that's impacting my brain. I think still in Christian culture at that time, and maybe even still today, there was a part of me that was questioning, am I a bad Christian for struggling with this? Is there something wrong with me spiritually? Am I not praying enough? None of that was verbalized to me, but I think it was just one of those messages that we kind of pick up in Christian culture, like, oh, you should just pray more. You should just take your thoughts captive, renew your mind with the truth of God's word, you know, which are all wonderful things. But it wasn't really, for me, it wasn't giving me the answers to why my body didn't feel right. There was a disconnect between my body and brain. And so when I was given that label of bipolar disorder, that's what really caused me to question, okay, so this makes sense. There's something wrong with my body and my brain, but now what? What do I do? Just given that diagnosis in itself, it's something we don't talk about enough in the mental health world. Just that was a little bit traumatic. That was, I was not given tools and resources to tend to myself during a life-altering diagnosis where I was told I'm always going to be broken. I'm always going to struggle with this. I'm probably always going to need to be on medication. Would I ever be able to have a child? Because those medications affect the child's development in utero. You know, there are all these questions that I didn't know. And eventually I just got mad, shut down. If anybody's familiar with dissociation, I had a pretty heavy pattern of dissociation in my life for many years where I would just kind of zone out, check out when things got overwhelming. It's something I've really had to work hard on even now as a parent, because you can't really zone out when you're parenting, you know? But I eventually I found myself pregnant with my daughter my senior year in college. And that was during a period where I was drinking way too much while I was on these psychiatric medications that you're not supposed to drink alcohol on. I was just drink alcohol with. I was very self-destructive. I had been in situations that were harmful and damaging in ways that I didn't know, because I was blackout, passed out drunk most of the time and just doing what I thought, you know, a normal college student would do. Well, I found myself pregnant. And that was the event that was pretty much the catalyst for healing in my life. It was still a long journey, but I had to get off that medication. People told me that, well, you might need to terminate the pregnancy because we don't really know what happens when people are on these medications. When there's a child being developed, it could cause neural tube defects and all these other issues. There were people who told me that I should place her for adoption. I was given a lot of support during my pregnancy from my Christian community. Thankfully, that was very redemptive. There were people that just surrounded me with support. My entire church surrounded me with support. But I still felt very alone, very much like, all right, God, this is something that you're going to have to figure out what to do. It was just me and God at that point. I needed to really figure out, where do I stand in my relationship with him, and my relationship with my parents, and my relationship with the world, and what I believe my place is in the world. And thankfully, somehow I experienced full remission of my symptoms while I was pregnant. This is something that I've heard happens for a lot of women, especially in the case of autoimmune disease. There's some immunosuppressive effects. And I do believe that hormones, all of that make an impact, right? But I experienced a really incredible pregnancy, gave birth to my daughter. She now is 21 and ironically studying psychology. She's in grad school. She wants to be a clinical psychologist. we talk about diagnoses all the time now. And she's currently at this phase where she's like, now tell me why you were diagnosed. And when you were diagnosed, what were your symptoms and what were you experiencing? Which is just wild to me, because her life is part, it comes from that experience. And so anyway, I'll just say that's kind of the, I probably spoke a little too long about it, but that's the story behind everything. I got married to an amazing man in ministry. Again, ironically, God just keeps having these Ferris wheel, puts me on this Ferris wheel ride. I think sometimes where I have these full circle moments, and marrying my husband was one. He was a product of a single mom whose his biological father did not have anything to do with him. He was adopted by his dad. So we got married. He adopted my daughter when she was six. And now we have two boys who are 11 and one just turned 9 yesterday. So that's the best I can do in a short amount of time.
Not bad,
I love
not
it. Bad. And you know what? Let's just speak to having lots of words, because that actually, I do think, is a God design piece. We all have to learn how to regulate when to talk, when not to talk, when to listen, oh right? But I just go, you know, I used to believe that too, that I would talk too much. I didn't talk until like I was in my late teens anyways. I was silent. And then when the words opened, right, I would talk. And I would always feel that shame of maybe I said too much, or have I talked too much? And then the Lord really reminded me that this is his gift in us, and he uses these words. It's part of being the mouthpiece in the body when we think about the body of Christ. And so I appreciated all your words, Erin, in the way that you shared your story. And I think it begs the question, you know, there's people listening on across the board. Maybe they're living with a diagnosis. They're wondering about their own child. But I think it's important to say that all diagnoses are labeling symptoms.
Yes.
And it isn't a pure science. It's, we look at symptoms and our diagnostic manuals, what in the medical field and in the psychology field, they're just saying, okay, this group of symptoms, this is what we're going to call it. But how we treat the symptoms, there's a wide variety of ways. And most people just go directly to medication because that is more the mainstream way to approach that. And sometimes those symptoms, the diagnosis might be just a temporary thing to bring some relief, but it might not be what's really going on. And so your story is kind of the layers that are coming off, the body's playing a part. So we're going to get into the nuances of all these pieces. But when you were diagnosed, maybe speaking about identity a bit, who do you think you really are? And then how did these diagnoses really help you with clarity, or how did they kind of cloud who God has made you to be?
Yeah. I mean, when I received my diagnosis, I mean, my identity, my label became my identity, right? Because I saw everything I was doing through the lens of bipolar disorder. And so if I had a really good day and I got excited about my day, because I am a very high energy person, I love people. I love talking. I do love talking, you know, like I love interacting. And I would be so afraid that, especially with my parents who were trying to monitor me, they wanted to make sure that I was okay. I was afraid that they would view it as mania, right? Or hypomania. I was afraid that any kind of excitement that I had about school or about writing essays, I was an English major. I loved reading literature. I loved writing essays. That was so much fun for me. And I was afraid if I got too excited, that would be pathologized, right? Likewise, if I, you know, December hits, the days get shorter, it's a little bit cold, it's a little bit cloudy. And if I experience low mood, some fluctuations, low motivation, feeling like my dopamine is crashing a little bit, I would be worried that, oh no, is this depression? So I viewed everything. I viewed all of my emotions like as a way to pathologize myself. And I still, to this day, especially with all the training I've done in functional medicine and integrative nutrition, I want to to fix and solve myself so much through the lens of what do my symptoms say and what does that mean about me? And I've had to really peel or I would take my foot off the gas pedal, we'll say it that way many times and just go, okay, Erin, what do we need for basics? What do you need to do to support your body right now where it is? Not everything is a diagnosis. Not everything is a symptom of something. Sometimes it's just life and emotions that fluctuate. And we serve a God who expressed a kaleidoscope of emotions in his word, right? I think about Jesus, when he was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he was literally sweating blood. And the fact that his body was suffering so much that it wasn't just the mental, emotional agony of what he was about to experience, but it was the physical agony. And that is always so reassuring to me that when I feel like my physical body is still to this day, like, oh, I'm in perimenopause, things are fluctuating, right? Like, I'm like, what's going on? What do I need to pathologize? It's like, wait a minute. I'm just experiencing humanity. I'm experiencing the fact that I am in a human body that fluctuates all the time. And so I say all that because it was really hard for me to understand anything outside of the lens of my labels. And that's what made me angry. And so eventually that I just created a disconnect. And I hurt so much for people, especially in our Christian communities, who we are disconnecting mind, body, and spirit. Maybe we have the mind part, right? Because of the pathology. Maybe we can figure things out in an intellectual way. But maybe we can tune into our spirit a little bit. Maybe we can communicate with God when we need to, how we need to. But that body piece, we neglect that. What is the body saying about safety? What is the body saying about our ability to connect with God, others, and ourselves? And so that was the missing piece. And that was the part that was completely disconnected and ruptured during my early struggle. And it did allow my labels to become my identity and the complete way in which I viewed my world.
Erin, I so appreciate the fact that you... and just you're sharing this, that so many people that might be listening to this are probably feeling a sense of, oh my gosh, that's how I feel. And how do I go from this rat race of which just feels so cyclical, and getting so hyper focused and hyper vigilant about my diagnosis or about my, you're calling people to balance. Your story reflects the hard journey that you took towards thinking about this in a more complex way, but not getting lost in it all. Your heart, mind, body, soul relationships. We think about that as, our definition of integrity, kind of moving in a congruent direction. And so you're honoring that in your story, and it helped you. It helps you to this day is what I'm hearing you say, ground you. It's like a grounding piece. What are some of the other recommendations that you've had that you found success in that also grounds you? I mean, you mentioned nutrition, for example. I mean, there was that's something I know you're excited to talk about too, but just some of those grounding pieces that have helped you that could help others.
Yeah. And I'll say a lot of that, just the way that my book is structured, it's in four parts. According to, I'm a former teacher, so it's an acronym that it stands for LIVE, which is learn to address stress, identify root issues, add variety to your diet, and exercise your body and brain. And so every single chapter has a mind-body activity to help ground us in reconnecting with our mind and body, especially that body that we typically neglect or we don't like or we're mad at. I see that a lot, especially people who deal with chronic pain, chronic physical things like fibromyalgia and then autoimmune disease and these things that are, they're constant reminders that my body's against me. But I really want to reframe that the symptoms that you're experiencing, they're typically your body doing exactly what it needs to protect you. And reframing that is a big part of my process and realizing that depression for me was freeze mode. If we're looking at the autonomic nervous system, right? And how the HPA axis, which is hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, how every part of your body is responding to your thoughts in order to protect you, in order to keep you safe. And so for me, experiencing depression was my body going, and we're done. And it was a complete, anybody who's experienced depression knows this. You cannot move. A lot of times we're bedbound. We are like checked out, zoned out, can't function. People will be like, well, yeah, just go for a walk. No, it's not happening because you actually have to put on your shoes. I'm not putting on my shoes when I'm depressed, right? It truly is the ultimate freeze mode. But I would say freeze mode is playing possum. It's you're keeping yourself safe because life has been so hard and so overwhelming that this is the only thing that you can do right now. And anxiety would be that flight mode, right? It would be fleeing the threat. It would be my brain is just a pinball machine of thoughts bouncing around. And worst case scenarios, I talk about worst case scenario brain in my book, and those are so protective. It's those thoughts where you're just like, well, wait a minute, I'm driving across the bridge and there's water over here. Well, let me make sure, what do I need to do to my windows to make sure that I don't, you know, like all just like those weird pesky, I call them pesky thoughts. They're not necessarily intrusive at a diagnostic level, but they're for survival, they're for protection. And so I think it's been really helpful for me to reframe my symptoms as protective. That mania, hypomania was that flip side of freeze mode. It's again, just my body overactivating a stress response essentially in order to protect me and to keep me going. And if I just keep going, I'm going to be okay. And I'm not going to be reminded of any kind of traumatic things that have happened to me. I'm not going to have to sit and reflect because I'm just going and I've got things to do and I've got lists to check off and I've got people to talk to. And so reframing that my body with its symptoms is protecting me. And I could flip that to people. I use autoimmune disease a lot as an example because the way traditional medicine would frame autoimmunity is that your body is attacking itself. And oh, that's a terrible thing to hear. If you're suffering from that, and I know so many people are, and so I know that listeners are experiencing this. What you hear when somebody tells you that is that you're broken, your body's attacking you, the world has attacked you, maybe you have trauma that you can't cope with, well, now your body's not on your side, right? And I would say, no, but these symptoms, your hypervigilant immune response is your body protecting you. It is your body activating. It's giving it everything it can to make sure that you're safe and okay. It's just the symptoms are not coming out so great, right? Like they don't feel great. Your lab work will reflect antibody levels that, maybe that doesn't look so good on paper, but ultimately it's your body trying so hard to restore balance back. And so that would be a big reframe. There are so many other things. Yes, with nutrition, we can support our autonomic nervous system in an instant with the right kind of nutrition. The right kind of a movement practice can instantly flip our autonomic nervous system state and take us from fight, flight, freeze to rest and digest. And it's something that we miss that we don't talk about so much when we're talking about mental health and physical health and chronic health issues. But I do think that reframe of your body's on your side, and what could you do to not, why is my body against me, but what can I do to partner with my body and support my body right now? It's a different reframe.
Love that. That's more of a grace posture, right? Of a working with versus fighting against. And, you know, as I'm hearing you share and I'm imagining different people listening, I think the confusion, if I simplified it a little bit, is that there's a medical model that says you're sick and we need to fix that. And then there's a holistic side that says, let's get to the roots and let's prevent or get your body working for you. And the mental health field has kind of straddled both sides and depending on what kind of a mental health provider you're seeing. And I know at Living Wholehearted, we straddle both. But I think the difficulty for most people, and I'd love for you to speak specifically, Erin, to your story, is when I think, okay, I have an autoimmune or I'm dealing with chronic symptoms, pain, that's often connected to our story and our buyout. There's a lot going on. It's a both and. But it's the chicken and the egg. Should I take the medicine because that's just going to help me actually put my shoes on so then I can go walk? Right. Or do I need to go change my entire diet, which feels exhausting to somebody who's just trying to survive? And I think that's really the difficulty is people understanding where they are in their journey and we need different kinds of support along the way. And so it isn't a, that's wrong and that's wrong or that's the way and this is the way. I think your invitation is let's step back and look a little bit more holistic and go, there's a lot of options. And what are you ready for? Because it's really difficult to get somebody who's in severe, you know, let's say just depression, clinical depression, to start working on their diet when it comes to nutrition. Yeah. So speak to that a little bit before we jump into the body piece, because I want to make sure we lay a good foundation and people don't feel like, oh my gosh, that sounds like too much work.
Yeah. I mean, depression is the hardest thing to come alongside someone and support them through. Like, yeah, like again, can't lace up their shoes. What, I'm going to cut some vegetables? Nope. You know, like that's just, it's really difficult. And so I think one of the things that comes to mind for me is the fact that it's not an either or, right? It's a both and. And so coming from my story, I was given two options to support my mental health. This was, you know, 25 years ago, but people are still being given these same options. It's sleep more and take your meds. Make sure you have a good sleep routine and take your medication. Don't miss a dose. You're going to be okay. Just stay on that. And that does work for a lot of people. And if that works for you, awesome. That is so great. Keep doing that, right? For me, I needed more and I wasn't given the resources that I needed. I did have some nutrient deficiencies, I believe, in my body. There were some root causes, some root issues happening with my gut health. We could talk about the gut brain axis. I could talk about that all day long. Maybe we'll touch on that when we get to the body part. But over 90% of serotonin, which is considered our happy neurotransmitter, it's used for so much more than just as a neurotransmitter, but it's created in our digestive tract, in our gut microbiome. It's synthesized there. And then we don't even make a lot of our neurochemicals, neurotransmitters, without getting nutrients from food. And if we're not digesting because we're so stressed out and because we're so anxious, well, that doesn't help us either. One of my favorite things to say is a body in stress won't digest. And so again, if you're in a stressed out state, just saying, hey, eat more vegetables or hey, sleep more, those things might not be sufficient tools. So maybe somebody does temporarily need to be on a medication or need to take certain nutritional supplements or utilize all, I mean, I'm about all of the tools. if it's helpful, if it doesn't come with a whole bunch of side effects for somebody, it's so individual, but use the tools that you can to get yourself where you need to go to give you kind of that boost. And those tools also can be therapy. It can be EMDR, the somatic therapies. It can be talk therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy. It can be, I mean, we have so, like you were saying, we have so many options. Unfortunately, when we're first presented with a diagnosis, those options can be limited. Mm-hmm. We live in a different world now where I think we have a little bit too much information than we did 25 years ago, and that can feel overwhelming. So that can really, that's another, you know, on the flip side of things, like, okay, then where does somebody start? Where do I start with this? And that's where I would start with, yes, start with your medical practitioner, start with your therapist. And then if you're not fully getting the support you need, what else is out there? I mean, I'm always going to be a little bit biased towards a functional medicine approach to health, because I think that there are so many more tools given, but there are a lot of functional medicine providers that are just going to load you up on 40 different supplements, put you on a restrictive diet, and it feels nearly impossible when you're struggling. And so I think finding the right person, the right fit, but I really do trust the Holy Spirit in that process. Like I was always brought to the right people at the right time and throughout my process. I mean, not without a lot of pain and heartache for sure. There are a lot of things that happened that were hard, but I do see God's hand leading me towards situations and health and wellness people who were just like kind of, which is the name of my podcast, Sparking Wholeness. They would just kind of spark little ideas here and there for me that made me go, huh, well, maybe I should look into that. And that is one good thing about this world that we're living in. We get all sorts of little ideas, like even just listening to this podcast, maybe this will give somebody just one little idea, you know?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Erin, so, you know, if for those that are listening, if you were to describe, hey, this is what you should look for when you're looking for help, and this is the kind of pathway that that you can trust. You gave one example, like, again, just someone who's attuning to and providing you options, mm-hmm. and giving you chances to explore and kind of pacing things. What are some other examples of things that you would say, hey, this is good when you're looking for or screening your helpers in your life, right? From a mental health professional to a medical scenario. What are some of those things that folks should look for?
Yeah, I mean, I think trying to steer, it's maybe more what not to look for, steer away from one size fits all solutions and looking for somebody who's open-minded to your symptoms, who will really listen to your story, right? And even I think taking a trauma-informed approach, while that phrase is a little bit trendy, I think that that's really important too, because I do sometimes wonder if just about everything that we struggle with mentally, even with some of our physical chronic health issues, if we can attribute them to trauma that hasn't been resolved. And so I think having a provider that understands that, and more are getting trained in that, and more understand that. But I would question, like, what do you, you know, if you're seeing somebody who's maybe just your regular PCP, just, hey, what do you know about trauma and the role it plays in some of these physical health issues? And if they look at you like a deer in headlights, it might be good to go see somebody else. You know, I think that that's important. We all have adverse experiences. We all have trauma. Not everybody experiences that hypervigilant traumatic response or has that stuck response in the body. Not everybody has those long-term impacts, but we do all have trauma. And a lot of times that does show up in our physical body. And so I think it's really important to find somebody who's versed in that. So that would be something to look for. I think it would be good to look for somebody who, again, is not just going to give you one size fits all solutions, but is going to individualize things for your needs and will take into account things like nutrition and movement and yes, sleep and yes, sunlight and nature, but also your spiritual life. And I do think it's important to find, if you're a believer, to find somebody who's a believer who can meet you in that way too. Just even having that co-regulation of somebody who will be there for you that you know is also a temple of the Holy Spirit, you know, like having that assurance can be so calming and helpful. And that makes a big difference too.
I love that. And let me just, again, I'm always like, let's just clarify that piece, but trauma-informed, it is such a cliche. And I started back in 2004 as a therapist, and I was initially introduced into EMDR and understanding trauma from the get-go. And I felt really odd and weird, and I was constantly always wanting and to bring trauma into the room. Now it feels like everybody wants to talk about trauma. So it's great. I don't feel alone anymore. But I do want to say that trauma informed means somebody who is understanding that your story impacts your body. So that's what you're saying, and that it's body up kind of therapy where we do more expressive and we're really thinking top down is more cognitive type. What do we believe? Talk therapy doesn't always get to trauma. And the other thing you're saying is that everybody has trauma at some level because we just live in a really, I mean, watching your grandfather die right in front of you is traumatic. And so we kind of always think, well, they have trauma. But if we look at our stories, we can see the trauma along the way. It's kind of like plaque and eating. Like if you just eat, you're going to have plaque on your teeth. The body just makes plaque. It's what we do after the plaque that's going to make a difference on cavities or not, right? And so most of us didn't get tools on how to care for the plaque. And so it's brushing your teeth. It's going to the dentist. It's taking good care to keep it clean. And so when you have too much plaque, you're going to have some side effects. And that's the way trauma is in our life. And so it attacks our bodies. It's actually stored in our brains. So let's talk a little bit about nutrition and how nutrition can be one of the ways we clean off the plaque. Because people think therapy, I'm going to go to a trauma therapist and process. But you as a functional, you know, coach, health coach wants to say we can also do these in our ordinary ways of doing life. And I would love to learn more for myself right now.
Yeah, no. And I love that, that analogy of the plaque. I think that that's so good because I could talk about trauma forever, but it's not stored in our hippocampus the way normal memory is. It's stored in an area of the brain that helps us with our autobiographical narrative and informs what's happening real time for us now. And so if that's the case, right, for somebody who's struggling with trauma or somebody who's struggling with anxiety, or maybe you don't really know you have trauma, you just know that you feel a little on edge all the time, right? That sends a signal to your autonomic nervous system. And one of the things that, and I was just talking, my husband's a therapist, and we were just talking about this the other day, and he's like, gosh, do you talk about that enough? Because I don't think I've ever heard that from you before. I'm like, I talk about this all the time. Anyway, but it is the fact that nutrition is somatic therapy. If we're talking about somatic, being of the body, being able to use food to help create safety for your body is huge. And so what I mean by that is that when we receive nutrients from food, not just any kind of food, right? Like we want to have nutrient dense food. Your body will break down those macronutrients of carbs, fats, and proteins using the nutrients that are in the food. The B vitamins, magnesium, minerals need to be in there. And then when we digest, if we digest those things, hopefully we are digesting those things, it creates ATP energy at the cellular level. And we are made of trillions of cells. So every single cell in your body is looking for safety cues based on the food that we eat. And one way that I often explain to my clients that I think is really important, I talk about this a little bit in my book as well, is that when our blood sugar is unstable, the body doesn't feel safe. And oftentimes blood sugar dysregulation can feel like a panic attack. One example that I think is fascinating is that there was some research done with young boys, maybe 12, 13-year-old boys, and they were given a sugary drink at the beginning of the day. And they wanted to monitor them throughout the day, see what their blood sugar did, see what else was going on in their body after they had that sugary drink. And this is a sugary drink, no caffeine, had at the beginning of the day. And the researchers were not surprised when they saw that their glucose response just spiked up very quickly, right? Because they had sugar, and then it dropped off very quickly. But what the researchers were surprised about is that within about 4 to 5 hours after they had that sugary drink, these kids also had surges of stress hormones like adrenaline, norepinephrine. Of course, cortisol is kind of a longer acting stress hormone. And for the kids that had these sugary drinks, they were experiencing symptoms like sweating, shaking, feeling a little bit panicky. And it wasn't necessarily the blood sugar response that was causing that. It was that surge of hormones after that really kind of put them in a fight or flight state just from having the sugar. And so I'm not going to sit up, you know, try to demonize sugar. Sugar is terrible, but we do need to be monitoring our response. And if we're just having, you know, we're starting our day and we're having our, you know, whatever drive-through iced coffee, you know, choice is with a whole lot of sugar, a whole lot of caffeine, and then we're not having food because we don't have time for that. That's just going to spike the blood sugar for sure, but it's also really going to spike that stress response throughout the day. And that can create some negative mental health feelings. And it's something that we don't think about. And even, and I know because I'm so up in the counseling world, I love the counseling world. I know our counselors will talk to people like, well, how are you eating? Yeah, I'm eating. I'm fine. I'm fine with the food. I'm like, okay, but let's dig into what that means and what that looks like. That's what I do. That's the fun part for me is like, what are you eating? Do you feel energy after you eat? Do you feel depleted after you eat? Because if you're eating and then all of a sudden you're hungry 2 hours later, or you're feeling shaky, or you're feeling drained, or you're feeling brain fog, then maybe that food that you're eating isn't really fueling you at the brain level to keep your mood steady. And it's often missed. It's something that I missed in myself for a long time because I am naturally, I don't have a lot of dopamine. And so I look for dopamine with food. I look for it with sugar. I look for it with crunch. I look for it with chips. Like that just gives me the thing to keep me going. Coffee. I'm a big coffee fan too. And so I say all these things because I am that person. And I had to learn that if I really want to feel steady, I don't like feeling those symptoms that I used to feel so many years ago. And so if I really want to stay steady, I do have to be careful with what I eat, and I have to include protein. Protein is having a moment right now for sure, but it is important. Protein breaks down into amino acids. Those amino acids get formed into neurotransmitters. I need to be eating good amounts of protein so that I can make neurotransmitters. I need to be eating complex carbs, enough fiber, because the fiber in food will act as prebiotic fiber, which is like Miracle-Gro for the gut bacteria in my gut, which is going to synthesize my neurotransmitters. So if I look at nutrition through the lens of what is it doing for my brain, what's it doing for my mental health, it is so helpful for me, because then we're not talking about, oh, I can't have that, or I can't have that because I'm on a diet. It's no, what does my body need to feel best? What does my body need to function best? And it's a missed puzzle piece a lot of times, but, I love it.
love that you're bringing it to the forefront. And it really is. I want to say real quick, Jess got a question here, but we live in Oregon. Okay. Everybody is aware of how food impacts us here up in Oregon. So the rest of the country slowly catching up. You down in Texas, you're bringing it to the forefront.
I'm trying.
But it's interesting because on the one side, we can have our offices filled with people who really know how to take care of their bodies and still have a lot of symptoms.
Yes.
And so I think it's interesting because we think everybody who comes to our leadership cohorts, it's only the Oregonians that have very specific food intolerances and are very aware of how their body responds. Everyone else is like, whatever. But I just think that's an interesting piece of the puzzle is I think the more you pay attention to your body, I think that's what you're drawing attention to. You'll start to notice, how does food make you feel? Mm-hmm. How is caffeine making you feel? How is sugar? And that is just that step alone is a huge part towards health. Instead of just doing whatever out of more of a dissociative state, right? Just coasting. Oh, totally. So I just wanted to draw attention to that piece because I think that alone is such a huge next step for people that you're drawing them to. And then maybe we can start adjusting how many, you know, cups of coffee you have per day.
Right. That's a good point, though. I do, because of this world of information overload, I do see a lot of people who are on paper doing everything right, but they're still struggling. And that's where I bring in that body and stress won't digest piece that I think sometimes there's that intellectualization of things. That's a trauma response, right? Just trying to figure it out. I want to figure it out. What am I? I'm going to take every food intolerance test there is to figure out what I can't have. But what does that really do? Now it just makes us afraid of the food. So now I'm sitting here and I'm looking at something with gluten in it and I'm like, well, gosh, if I have this, what's going to happen to me? You know, it just becomes its own, it's another stressor. Like, do we really need another stressor? And so I do try to take a pretty balanced approach with that. And that's where when I get into the nutrition conversation in my book, I start with that chapter, Body and Stress Won't Digest, and what is the relationship with food like? And are we using food as a way to partner with our body and tune into the needs, which is what you're saying? Or are we doing it to control, to fix, and in Christian culture, I think sometimes there's this purity mindset with food, this morality mindset with food that can be really tricky. And so really taking away that any of that noise that we've heard and just go, okay, but what is my relationship with food and what is helpful for me to do to partner with my body?
I just love the way, I mean, I think the theme for today's talk is really about reframing, and you embody this in your own story, but you're also an advocate for this with all the clients that you work with and people and the works that you've written. That reframe is, it's a wonderful discovery. It seems like, you know, that people can go from feeling, you know, the shame messages that are so easy and the negative self-talk that permeates us, to really gaining some measure of control as we connect to truth and really the root causes of things. I mean, that's the thing I love so much. I'm not a therapist, but I love so much about the fact that this kind of work, it really gets to root stuff. It gets down to, I wanted to solve things in my own story, right? The trauma, and I didn't understand a lot of it either. And you can get so lost in it. And I think that it's so helpful to have a trusted guide that can help you go, okay, look, we don't need, there's even comedy here. There's a humor that you know, brought forth. Like, it's just a funny thing, right? Like, we would, in our tendencies, we could be self-sabotaging in the funniest of ways, right? When you don't see food as fuel, but you see it as and you could be doing all the right things, totally on it, and yet be stressed out about it, and it be negating all the work that you're doing. I mean, there's sort of a humor to that where it's like, oh my gosh, how liberating to come to a realization that may be what's going on for you. And again, a call to reframe, a call to look deeper, to actually know what's going on is empowering. And it leads us to freedom. And that's a beautiful journey that people can take. But my gosh, no wonder why you're so passionate about it. So many people, we get lost. We get so down. And so just so much appreciation for what you're doing, Erin.
Yeah. So Erin, as we wrap up this conversation, what do you hope are the biggest takeaways you have or the readers have when they read your book?
Yeah, I really, my biggest hope and prayer, I mean, this is something I've been praying about since it's been released, is that people will feel seen, heard, and validated. And so far I've received messages from strangers, just random people who have read my book, and they feel that God is right there with them, that God is speaking to them in new ways through the book. And so, yes, I love talking about the things that I've learned and my story, but at the end of the day, I don't want this book to be about my story and my knowledge, right? I do want it to be a catalyst for hope for people, and that God will be working through them through the reading of that book. And whatever way that God does, that it will just spark some wholeness, some integrated wholeness, some integration of mind, body, and spirit. That I want to see, my big dream for this, right, is like I want to see people looking at their story, looking at their bodies, and instead of the shame, yeah, instead of the labeling, instead of the I'm broken and I can never get past this, just to go, wow, look what God has done in my life. Look how God has protected me through my story, through my body and its symptoms. And I know that that can sound really hard to believe. And I say that all with very compassion, saying I was the person who thought I was broken, who did not like my body, who thought that I would never be able to overcome these symptoms, these labels. And I'm not saying that you're going to read my book and receive perfect healing, right? But I'm saying it could give you just some ideas, some tools to help support yourself in ways that maybe you haven't seen before. But really, it's just that I have been there and I see you and I want you to feel seen. But more importantly, I want God to see you as you're reading this book.
Thank you, Erin. Thank you for writing this book. And you know, I just want to make sure it's clear if someone's listening and they have a label. Okay. So, and the label has been freeing for you. It has helped you with a diagnosis to say, this is what this is called. And it's given you treatment. So that's the other factor, is that a label from the DSM diagnostic manual is actually supposed to connect to treatment. And if the treatment is working and helping you, then yay. Okay. Right. But if it's not, Erin is inviting us to the table to say, hey, yes, you're not stuck. There are some other ways. And the label itself isn't necessarily the healing. It's the what you're doing to care for yourself and to work with your mind, body, heart, and soul, and to let others come alongside you. So I really appreciate your book. And I'm just going to say it again, Live Beyond Your Label, A Holistic Approach to Breaking Old Patterns and Rediscovering a Healthier You in Mind, Body, and Spirit by Erin Carey. How can people find you and your resources?
Yeah, I am most active on Instagram, and you can look up Erin Carey. Sparking Wholeness is where it was my handle on Instagram. I also have my podcast, Sparking Wholeness. My website is erinbcarey.com. I've got a free food is mood guide. I have a mood reset assessment questionnaire and guide also available that people could look at. And then my book is everywhere books are sold. And I'm just really grateful to have it out and to be able to share the story. And the story that I thought would, you know, just be my, what would I say, that I thought my diagnosis would be my negative prognosis. And it's turned out to be something that hopefully is giving other people hope. And that's only God can do that kind of thing, right?
That's right. Thank you. That's great. Thank you, Erin. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, did you know that we're not just podcasters? One of the best ways to connect with Tara and I and our whole team at Living Wholehearted is our website, livingwholehearted.com. There you're going to find the books that we've written, our e-courses, executive coaching, organizational development, and professional counseling services. And then one of our favorite things that we're up to these days, our Wholehearted Leadership Cohorts, where we take groups of leaders for 1 to 2 year journeys together. It's amazing. While you're there, for fresh content, make sure that you sign up for our e-newsletter. That's where we're putting out stuff every month that you want to keep close with. So visit livingwholehearted.com.
You can also join us on socials at @living_wholehearted on Instagram, and we are Living Wholehearted on Facebook. You can also follow me at Tara Mattson on Instagram. We love to engage with you personally there, so make sure you reach out. Leave us a review if you're enjoying this podcast. And if you're a mom of a daughter, check out our nonprofit, Courageous Girls, at mycourageousgirls.com, where you're going to learn about biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom, where it's helping you walk with your daughter at every stage of her growing years, helping her to be courageous and confident in a day such as this.
Hey, thank you for caring about being the kind of person and leader that lives with integrity.